from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, the Bay Area has the nation's second worst traffic congestion. That's according to a new study by GPS navigation company TomTom. And a recent survey by the Bay Area Council finds that more than 71% of respondents think traffic congestion is a crisis in the region. Meanwhile, transit alternatives like BART are facing increased ridership and overcrowding. We'll discuss growing congestion and explore possible solutions. We'll also address this week's Muni sick-out, which led to reduced service by San Francisco's municipal transit agencies. Is your commute getting slower? How are you coping? Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. A study released just yesterday shows Los Angeles and San Francisco presently having the worst traffic congestion in the United States. And a recent poll commissioned by the Bay Area Council also revealed that traffic is seen by a majority of Bay Area citizens as presently being at a crisis stage. Muni, the Bay Area's largest transit system, was recently the target of a sick-out, and Monday of this week saw only about a third of its vehicles providing service. San Francisco City Attorney Dennis Herrera has filed charges against the Transit Workers Union, and the fleet is now back in operation. But labor struggles continue. BART, following its own bitter and contentious employee strike, has had an ongoing escalation in its ridership with more standing and longer waits. And what does all this mean for transportation use in the Bay Area? How is your commute? We want to discuss the problems of congestion on roadways and public transportation in this forum hour, and look, we hope, for possible solutions. Let me tell you who's joining us. I want to welcome, first of all, Michael Cabanatuan, transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, joins us from Albany by phone. Welcome, Michael.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to Jim Wunderman, who joins us from the city. He's president and CEO of the Bay Area Council. That's a regional business-sponsored public policy group which commissioned the survey called The Pulse of the Bay. Welcome, Jim Wunderman.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to our in-studio guest, Randy Rentschler, is here. He directs legislation and public affairs for the MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, the Transportation Planning, Coordinating, and Financing Agency for the nine-county San Francisco Bay Area. Welcome, Randy Rentschler.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have with us in studio this morning Alex Bayan. He is Associate Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at UC Berkeley and is incoming Director of the Institute of Transportation Studies at UC Berkeley. And welcome, Alex Bayan.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. Let me begin, Michael Cabanatuan, with you, and let's just begin by finding out what's happening with Muni. As I said, they seem to be running again. They are running again. Where does this go from here? Do we know?
The first place it goes is, hopefully wherever you want it to go on Muni. They are back in full service today after having increasingly better service throughout the week, but on Monday, 700 out of the 1,200 runs that they make per day were not made. Today, they're back in full service. The cable cars are running. As far as the contract dispute, the next place that goes is apparently before an arbitrator and mediator on Saturday. There are indications that both sides might not show up, or one might show up and not the other, but that is the next official stop.
Let me kind of get an overview from you, Michael. I alluded in my introduction to this TomTom study, and I'm curious to know what you make about it. Just to give listeners a little of the nuance of this, the percentage of drivers with a 30-minute delay commute who were delayed an average of 90 hours back in 2013 while behind the wheel was at 36% in L.A. and at 32% in San Francisco. And even when you go down to San Jose, it's 26%. So it's bad and it's getting worse.
Yes, it is. I mean, as the economy gets better, as more people are working, as more people have more discretionary spending, they drive a lot more. And I think that's what we're seeing.
And we're also seeing, in fact, I was talking about this a little bit with Randy Rentschler before we went on the air, record numbers of people using all forms of transportation, public transportation, Caltrain, new record ridership, BART, we'll talk about with Randy and so forth. The bridge traffic's at a record.
Yeah, you know, it really has. I think for a lot of people out there, I'm going to probably reveal a little bit of a secret. You know, it used to be if you showed up at the Bay Bridge Toll Plaza a little bit before 6 a.m., you were going to get a much better trip than if you showed up, let's say, a little bit after. But that curve has shifted now. You need now to get to the Bay Bridge closer to 5:30 a.m. to get that trip you once got. So we're seeing a much wider shoulder of the commute period from as early as 5:30 to as late as 10 o'clock in the morning.
And let's talk for a bit about BART with you, because the numbers are going up probably as we speak here. I mean, they're pretty dire predictions. They're talking about 500,000 riders in 5 years. That's not sustainable, is it?
Well, you know, it's going to be a big challenge for BART. And, of course, it's just like the peak. BART has a lot of seats available, but it's just not when you want them. You know, BART's ridership has increased 16% since 2010 alone. They're at over 400,000 rides per day. And I think for a lot of people who are on BART, they're on for a long ride, so it's a long wait. It also means parking can be tough. So we're really having a symptom of a good economy with respect to BART. BART has some challenges with new cars and other investments they need to make into their system, which we can talk about later. So it is a big challenge, but it's an important thing to get people on public transit.
Challenge involves more safety risk, does it not?
Well, I wouldn't call it necessarily a safety issue for BART. I think more of it's a comfort issue in getting to the station.
And let me go back, if I could, just for a moment to you, Michael Canabatuan. You know, we've put a, I suppose this may be a metaphor, or it may be certainly larger than a metaphor, about $1.2 billion over the last 20 years. There's a whole report about this in the Contra Costa Times, into what's as jammed as ever, one of the Bay Area's most congested highways, 101.
You know, there are investments being made all over the Bay Area, and whether they pay off or not is... It is difficult to tell. As much money as invested, you will probably never eliminate the problem. One of the problems with traffic spending and investment is that it's usually done after the fact. There's usually congestion, traffic jams. You invest the money, things improve a little bit, but you're always playing catch-up.
And Jim Wunderman, let's look at your study. I mean, once again, we find out that most people are indeed saying, well, there should be some kind of carpool or there should be some kind of public transportation, but they're driving alone, most of them.
Yeah, it's probably no surprise that the vast majority of folks believe we're in a transportation crisis. And according to the study, which was of 1,000 Bay Area respondents, 77% normally drive alone, which is way, way too many. So we haven't been successful at getting people either out of their cars or into carpooling situations. So we need to do much better there.
And we need to do that how? I mean, we're going to toss around some possible solutions here. I'm sure we'll hear from listeners who have ideas. But from the report that you put out with the Bay Area Council, what are you suggesting?
Well, we have a number of things we're working on. And you know, one of the things that's happened is major companies, particularly the large technology companies down in Silicon Valley, have approached us and asked us to help coordinate strategy with regional agencies and Caltrans and others, because they have now said that to us that their companies are seeing the traffic gridlock as a strategic issue. And when they say that, that concerns us, and we think they mean that they're looking at alternatives if we can't get our arms around this. So we have built a tremendous amount. If you look at the seismic retrofitting of the bridges, the rebuilding of the Bay Bridge and the Carquinez and Benicia, the tunnels, the Caldecott, Half Moon Bay, the road improvements we've made throughout the region, we've spent billions of dollars. Some of these projects are extremely important and valuable, but we haven't gotten there, and we don't have the money to continue this, and we don't have the time. So we're looking at near-term technological solutions, aligning incentives to get people to use different modes of transportation and to use transportation differently. We're way behind in this region. If we travel to China a lot, we see a country that has a lot of congestion, but lots of technology in place so that drivers know where they're going. We see a lot more people, multiple folks in cars. There's a lot of incentives in place to doing that. We don't have that so much in the Bay Area, and we don't really have the liberty at this point to just keep doing the things the way we're doing, because every year that study comes out and says the Bay Area has the second worst traffic in the country, despite how much we invest. So,
yeah, here's what's demoralizing.
We can talk later about some of the specifics that we're looking at.
But I was just going to say it's demoralizing when you look at transportation a year ago and you see we're about the same place we were a year ago.
and the year before that, and the year before that. So, you know, part of this, as Randy said, is a good problem to have. We have an economy in the Bay Area that's actually the envy of the rest of the country, and people constantly come and ask us how we do what we do. But it is putting way more people onto our mass transit systems and onto our roads, and there's only so much one can do until the system kind of breaks, and that's where we're at. And anyone who's probably sitting behind the wheel right now, gripping the steering wheel, or in that Bay Bridge backup that Randy describes, amazing to think that at 5:30 in the morning, you're already in a massive backup. And what time did you start to get to that point? So we have to do better than this, and we think we have some ways to do that.
Well, we'll find out about those. But in the meantime, notwithstanding the enviable economic position you alluded to for the Bay Area, how's all this congestion affecting economic growth and the economy in general?
Well, so far, I don't think it's put a lid on it. Companies are still growing. We're seeing new real estate deals taking place at a massive scale. Companies planning to increase employment in the thousands, and so I think so far the Bay Area is doing very, very well. But some of the companies that we have, the reason they're doing well is they're at the front end of technology and innovation in the world. And what they're saying to us is, let's apply technological and innovative solutions to our challenge. And so, you know, we can do that. There are systems we could have in place in a fairly short order for a nominal amount. They're expensive, but nothing compared to building a new freeway or adding miles of new transit, fixed rail, which would better meter the traffic on the freeways. Right now, we have essentially either a dumb metering system or we have a non-functioning metering system. And so we have to look at traffic on a corridor basis and have the technology in place to allow us to use the system way more efficiently. If we can just get nominal improvement on the roads, a few percentage points of improvement on the use of the freeways, it actually has a dynamic effect in reducing congestion. So for a little bit of gain in efficiency, you get a big gain in congestion relief. And those are the kinds of things we need to do and the investments we need to make.
And again, Jim Wenderman is President and CEO of the Bay Area Council. Let's find out some of the other things that we can do. We have Alec Byan with us. Alec Byan is, again, Associate Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at UC Berkeley and incoming Director of the Institute of Transportation Studies at UC Berkeley. And Alex, talking about some incentivizing for public transportation. We've been talking about it for years, but some new ideas here?
Well, I think that the research community has really investigated a lot of different aspects of this problem. I mean, the first one is to really get people the right information. If you don't even know what's coming ahead of time or ahead of your commute, then there is really no incentive to deviate your behavior. That means basically to go to public transit or choose alternate modes or ride sharing. So I think in that respect, we still have to do a lot of progress in informing people in real time of the traffic. But then if you look beyond that, there's a lot of different studies that have shown that if you start to reward people for example, changing their route, and that could also be, for example, changing their time of commute, commuting later or commuting earlier, a lot of people might be willing to change their habits.
This is like the lottery approach to alternative driving?
So the lotteries have worked extremely well in Singapore and even on the Stanford campus in contained environments where you have really a fixed set of people that come to a perimeter. It's much harder to do at the corridor level where you're dealing with one-on-one from San Francisco to San Jose. But I think that this is one of the very promising approaches to this problem.
We have to do more with apps, though. We have to do more on radio.
Absolutely. I think radios and apps are essential. And I think what people have to understand is that, you know, we cannot build our way out of congestion. I mean, there's no room to build more highways and freeways. So the only way the traffic will go down once people are on the road is by managing traffic better. And there's many ways to do that. Changeable message signs provide good information. Apps will do better. Operations have to be run differently. And the California Department of Transportation has done a really good job at investigating how technology can help. In particular, they're now looking at the possibility of using variable speed limits to smooth out the flows. We talked about metering a bit earlier on the show, but that's also another thing. We can improve greatly how metering is done, and then coordinating the metering with the secondary network is like getting people to the freeway at a time when it doesn't clog the freeway. That means changing potentially signal timing plans in the cities around the corridor. So it's a really global problem, and it has to be dealt at the corridor level.
What about congestion pricing? There's a lot of talk about that.
So it is a very politically complicated thing, right? Because, I mean, there are examples around the world where things have worked differently. If you take the example of Singapore, it might become easier there to impose different tolling.
It's a very effective metro system.
That's right. That's right. And I think there's very futuristic solutions which have been proposed and are now feasible from a technology standpoint, is the ability of having every vehicle report their position and basically being tolled based on the road you take, regardless of going through a toll plaza. Of course, politically, it's going to be very complicated to implement in the United States, but countries like Singapore, for example, are already looking at these types of solutions.
Randy Rensler, I wanted to ask you about something that I was just happened to be reading about today in the Marin Independent Journal. Caltrans trying to balance bikes and pedestrians and really the traffic flow over in Tam Junction. The lights are not in time for the cars. I mean, there are huge backups. There are jams there. And the new traffic light over at Shoreline Highway and Tennessee Valley Road is not a traffic light that's helping drivers in terms of congestion.
Well, look, that is true. And, you know, Alex is really hitting on an important point that I think to a certain extent we do know what the solutions are. I think people have a hard time, let's say, accepting them. I'll give you an example of metering lights. Metering lights is a technology that has been known for years to be effective. While we've made some good progress in many places around the Bay Area, we still have places around the Bay Area where the citizenry doesn't want them to be put in, even though we know they're effective. I think the best long-term plan that we have on the subject of both pricing and technology is to connect our carpool lanes together and make them express lanes so people can get in and pay a toll. Whether or not you're a single occupancy driver or if you're a carpool, you go free. I think that's the kind of solution that we're going toward, and it would be a significant improvement for many people in the Bay Area. But to a certain extent, we need to get the citizenry to accept that these solutions are better than the problem. And the problem, as Jim Wunderman mentioned, isn't just in a personal experience, but it's our economy. We need to have mobility to have the successful economy that people in the Bay Area want to have.
And Michael Canabatuan, if I can go back to you, let's talk about the status of these congestion pricing measures or other proposals in both San Francisco and throughout the Bay Area. Where are they at?
Well, really, the only congestion pricing that's in place right now is on the Bay Bridge. During the peak commute hours, both in the morning and the evening, you pay $6. During other times, you pay $4. On the other bridges, it's $5. Studies have shown that there is a small advantage. It seems to have pushed a little bit of traffic to the shoulders, which are, you know, a little earlier and a little later, as Randy alluded to, the secret hours. But if you talk to people who are experts on congestion pricing, they'll say really that $2 difference is not enough. It would have to be something higher. And as you've said, politically, that's probably not going to fly.
Well, we have, Jim Wunderman, from your study, a situation which a great proportion of people think has reached the crisis point and urgent action is needed. 22% strongly agree with that. 49% some would agree. That's about more than 7 out of 10. So what kind of urgent action, I mean, even in the short run, are we looking at?
So right now we're looking really hard at the Highway 101 corridor. That's that lifeline of our economy between Silicon Valley and San Francisco. And we want to look at it as a corridor. And we're working with the high-tech companies, I won't name them, but you know who they are, who have a lot of employees who are involved in this and are delayed to work, and it's causing a problem. And so we're looking at a number of different technological solutions. We're working with a major company in analytics to test the different approaches from applications for ride shares to a metering system that would be a corridor-wide metering system, run the length of the 101 system. We're looking at different pricing mechanisms. We're thinking about something we're not supposed to think about because it's illegal in California, which would be converting. If you note, there's an HOV lane that runs from San Jose up to Redwood City, then it stops, and then there's no lane. And so there is no room or money to build an additional lane between Redwood City and San Francisco. So the solution would be to take a lane out and turn that into an HOT lane. And that it would be very, very controversial, as was said. However, that's one way to incentivize people to start becoming carpools and get out of these one-person occupancy vehicles. And so we're looking at that and what effects that would have and how to educate and encourage people to consider that kind of pricing and incentive system. So we want to analyze these things. We're working directly with Randy and Steve Heminger at MTC. I met yesterday with Brian Kelly, the Secretary of Transportation for California. He's encouraged. I think it's true. Caltrans is taking a really different path toward how they look at our systems in California. There's a number of things we probably could do with a little more capacity. We helped put the funding together to electrify the Caltrain system, so in the future that should provide a little bit more opportunity for folks to use Caltrain. Clearly extending that system down to San Francisco would provide some more opportunity to use transit in that corridor. So there's a number of things that we could do that shouldn't cost too much, some that will cost but will be extremely valuable in the fairly near term. We're talking 6 months, a year, 2 years, where we could see some significant improvement. It will take a partnership between the business community and the agencies, including especially the one that Randy represents, MTC, to come together, do things a little bit differently, and step out of the old mode and apply technology, ingenuity, and willingness to take some risk, frankly, in order to move us forward. But that's what we need to do.
Alex Bayan, what you're hearing from Jim Wunderman, you said we can't build our way out. We need to change our behavior. Does this resonate for you along those
totally.
Lines?
I think what he said makes perfect sense. I think we're really fortunate in California that our state has taken great leadership, in particular through Caltrans, the California DOT, in solving that problem, and in particular in the integration of all these technology into corridor management. What we just heard makes a lot of sense. It's not a problem which is a freeway problem or a transit problem or a train problem or any kind of other problem. It's all of them together, and it's all these technologies working together. And so what we see today, in particular in California, is the notion that in order to respond better to congestion, we need to defragment jurisdictions. The problem of if you take a major corridor like I-210 in Los Angeles is that there are lots of jurisdictions in charge. There's the cities, Pasadena, Arcadia, Duarte, Monrovia, etc. There's the county. There is LA Metro. There is the state, Caltrans. And I think that given that in some places up to 60% of congestion is due to accident, what's needed is not only better technology, but better concepts of operations. How do these cities work together with the private sector to respond to these things in a unified manner? And that's, very crucial in order to improve congestion.
Well, you're suggesting the necessity of synergy and partnerships and all those kinds of things. And Michael, Kevin Atwan, we only have a few moments left with you. What about the political will for what we're hearing here, or putting some teeth behind?
Well, I think the Bay Area Council study shows that there is political interest. What happens, though, is that I hate to use the NIMBY term, but especially since roads generally go in front of people's houses as opposed to in their backyards, but people often want things to change, but they don't want the changes to be in their neighborhood. They don't want their off-ramp metered. They don't want a bus rapid transit stop in front of their house. They don't want transit-oriented development, five-story buildings in their suburban neighborhoods. A lot of it is trying to negotiate that. I think people's opinions have changed. The Bay Area Council's study also shows that while people don't necessarily want a lot of things in their neighborhood, that the level of opposition seems to have weakened, and people are showing that, they would rather live in a smaller house in a place that is walking distance to stores and transit rather than a big house in the suburbs, and that is a change.
Michael Cabanatuan joined us this morning from Albany. He's a transportation writer with the San Francisco Chronicle. Michael, good to have you with us. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it, and appreciate hearing from you, our listeners. I'm going to put out our phone number and a number of other ways you can communicate with us, really talking about questions of transportation in this region and what can be done. And as I've said in the beginning, how's your commute? You may want to chime in here and let us know if it's getting worse, which it appears to be, at least according to the numbers and the studies that have been done. Toll-free number is 866-733-6786 if you have questions or comments and would like to join the conversation. Again, that toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We'll continue with Randy Rentschler, Jim Wunderman, and Alex Buyout, and we'll hear from you when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about a new study that shows that the Bay Area traffic congestion is actually the second worst in the United States. And the Bay Area ranks second worst for traffic jams in the nation, according to a new study by GPS navigation company TomTom. There was also a recent survey by the Bay Area Council, which found that more than 70%, actually 71% of their respondents think traffic congestion is a crisis in this region. And meanwhile, transit alternatives like BART are facing increased ridership and overcrowding. We're talking about growing congestion in this hour and looking at possible solutions. With us for the rest of the hour, Randy Rentschler, who directs legislation and public affairs for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. That's the transportation planning, coordinating, and financing agency of the nine-county San Francisco Bay Area. Jim Wunderman is with us by phone. He's president and CEO of the Bay Area Council, a regional business-sponsored public policy group, which commissioned the survey, The Pulse of the Bay, that came up with that figure of over 70%, saying we're in crisis mode here. And with us also in studio is Alex Byant, who's associate professor of civil and environmental engineering at UC Berkeley, and also incoming director of the Institute of Transportation Studies at UC Berkeley. Let's find out what's on your minds. And I asked the question again, how slow is your commute? And you may want to talk about it. Let's go first to Berkeley and welcome Tim. Hi, Tim.
Hi, thanks. Well, my commute is generally relatively short, and mostly it's the rollover commute or bike. But what I wanted to comment on is the need to really focus on what Mike was just talking about just a few minutes ago, which is the opportunity to build a coalition to support things like the transit-oriented development, the BRT in the neighborhood, and the solutions like these that actually help contribute to solving this problem by creating better connections between where we live and where we work, and providing more housing choices near where we work. And the latter is actually critically important. And I think that the business community and a lot of environmentalists are in agreement that by creating more housing in walkable neighborhood settings near where the employment is, that we can actually make life better for most people and provide more choices. And this is really hard work because a lot of neighborhoods are scared of change and don't want new things. And I think that we can overcome that if we work together to make sure that new housing construction is actually well-designed and helps make neighborhoods attractive, convenient places.
And let me go to Randy Rentschler on this, Tim, and I thank you for the call. I mean, he's talking about rolling up sleeves and overcoming NIMBY by some grassroots neighborhood action.
Well, look, Tim has a really good point. You know, people in my line of work have been asked for decades to spend billions of dollars to connect people from where they live to where they work, and that was often, you know, a really large distance. You know, Tim also mentioned this idea of a campus. You know, if you have a campus in the traditional term, let's say a university, he's from Berkeley, so we'll use that. We have a lot of housing right next to that campus. You know, there's students in dorms. I think if we talk about employment campuses, is what you hear in the high-tech community, often they're seeking to replicate that, some setting that, you know, is low buildings and, you know, all sprawled out. The problem they're experiencing is getting people to get to that campus who don't live nearby. And I think, as Tim mentioned, it's a big challenge for us to shift this thought pattern from spending billions of dollars to connect people long distances to having people live a little bit closer to where they work, in this case, a lot closer, and have people live next to transit. So it's a big challenge. We're moving in that direction, but it's going to take a while.
I should mention here that the Pulse of the Bay also talks a lot about housing and the interaction and necessity to have interconnectedness between housing and transportation. Jim, can you give out your website so people can go and read that full report?
Sure. It's a www.bayareacouncil.org.
And I want to bring on some more of your calls. We'll go to San Jose. Todd, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. My comment is that I have a commute that's not too bad. It generally ranges from 20 to 40 minutes depending on traffic. But I would love to take the train to work or something like that. But if I did, it would take well over an hour. If we could develop mass transit systems that actually, you know, could give more of us a reasonable commute time, you know, the current ridership numbers would seem to indicate that people would take it.
That's a problem, Alex Byant. I mean, you hear a lot of complaints about people if it didn't take so much time to do public transportation. I do public transportation.
Right. Well, it's some findings indicate, for example, that one third of the people in the Bay Area do not even consider making any mode change in other than driving. So no transit, no bike, no walk, even if there are a reasonable set of alternatives. And I think that there are many aspects to that problem. And one of them is the time effectively spent in transit. But sometimes it's also what's called sometimes the last mile problem. It's really how do you get to transit? And so I think, again, when looking at these problems, they have to be looked at in a global manner. Yes, for individual commuters, it might be better to take another mode. On the other hand, if you look at the system globally, it might provide better results to get more people to switch to transit mode rather than modernizing the transit system to get faster. So this is a pretty complex problem that is quite complicated to look at.
Let me go to some comments here, Randy Rentschler, for you, get your response to. Here's a tweet that says, any correlation between second worst traffic and second highest paid transit workers?
I'm going to say no to that. I think there's a large correlation between second worst traffic and a really good economy. And then I suspect you can take it from there. A really good economy, often has higher prices. So we need to make sure people can live here.
There's another listener named Eric who says, it mystifies me that Bay Area transit agencies aren't putting more resources into express bus service. It is much more cost effective than fixed rail systems like BART or Caltrain.
Look, there's a good bit of truth to that, and we have put some express bus services in around the whole Bay Area. When voters voted to increase the tolls back in 2004, it had a large express bus component in it. We're having some successes in certain corridors, but it hasn't worked everywhere. So, what works in some places, and it seems obvious it's going to work everywhere, it's a bit of a mixed bag.
One more email, Randy, if I could, for you. Kurt says, can you address the Transbay traffic challenge and the old idea of building a new bridge? Perhaps not a car, but a light rail train bridge is more appropriate?
Well, look, I think a lot of folks would like to go back to the future and have the key system in place. It's not here. For those who need to know about it, I would just go look up the key system. But I think where we are really is we have a good Bay Bridge alternative for transit and BART. We have a good one for AC transit and buses. We also have the ferry boats. Most people cross that corridor on transit during the peak and don't drive alone. I would reiterate one last point. Probably the biggest unused transportation asset we have in the Bay Area is the empty seat right next to the driver. And while we do have casual carpooling in the Bay Area that's unique, I think one of the things we do need to do is to use technology to allow people to connect better. We're beginning to see that in its beginning forms. We're hopeful that it can improve.
And Jim Wunderman, wondering how you might respond to a listener who sends us this web posting under the name of Moist Pup. And he writes, the population of the state of California has doubled since the 1970s. However, we have not doubled our public transit system bandwidth or service area. We need to stop building new roads and start building smart and reliable transit that gets people to a larger service area as fast as possible.
Well, the population has increased. The investment over time in transit has increased a great deal relative to how much we've invested in new roads, and Randy can give you those numbers, but a huge share of the funding that goes into transportation has actually gone into mass transit. One of the challenges is it's, especially for the fixed rail systems, it's very expensive to build, and some of the other ideas on bus rapid transit, on express bus systems, in order to do express buses, you need places where people can get the buses. One of the things we've done is we're working with MTC and with Caltrans to see if we could free up some real estate that Caltrans has for park and ride, so people who can take a short distance in their car and get on a bus. Then you need a system that allows the buses to travel more freely, so allow, complete the HOV system in the region, which in some case means taking a lane, and then allow the express bus system to use that. So I agree we need to do everything that we can to get people out of their cars, not just because of the congestion, but because of the impacts on the environment, greenhouse gases, and the quality of life. And if we had the kind of transit system in the region that actually functioned for people, I absolutely believe people would use it because it's a better way of life. But unfortunately, it only does a good job in certain circumstances and doesn't do a good job in many others, and it kind of forces people back into the choice of using their car. Here, I totally agree with Randy, we need to use every means available to limit the one-person vehicle and get two and three and more people into those cars. And there's a system of incentives and perhaps sticks that we can apply to get people thinking differently about their commute.
Again, Jim Wunderman is president and CEO of the Bay Area Council, and Alex Bayan is associate professor of civil and environmental engineering at UC Berkeley and incoming director of the Institute of Transportation Studies there. Alex, let me get a response from a couple of emails, listener emails from you. This is Carol who writes, I live in Alameda, an island which is slated for a huge amount of development at the former Alameda Naval Air Station, as well as many infill projects. Traffic studies get written, yet development marches on. Shouldn't developers have to pay a premium to offset their impact on traffic?
Well, it's again, it's a very complex problem, and these things have been discussed quite a lot. I think at the key of this is to understand the impact of future development on traffic patterns. And so these studies have been led sometimes by the state, sometimes by other agencies. And at the core of it is really demand management. So again, we get back to the notion that wherever there's going to be local population growth, you want to manage traffic better. And yes, maybe a premium would regulate that.
Here's an email from a listener. Let me go to you on this. Randy Rensler says he lives in San Francisco. He commutes to Redwood City. His name is Andy, and he writes, Caltrain is far too crowded. They simply don't run enough trains, 33-minute gaps at morning and evening rush hour, exclamation mark. How long will it be before they run more trains, and what will it take to get them to coordinate with BART so I'm not regularly getting off a Caltrain at Millbrae just after a BART has left?
Well, look, there's a bunch of good parts of that question. Look, one of the things we do need to do better here is we have 26 transit districts in the Bay Area. We need to do something about that. Coordination is one thing. When it comes to Caltrain, you know, Caltrain historically was a commuter railroad. We're beginning to change that. We're going to electrify that line. We're going to get new rolling stock on that line. We're putting a new train control system on that line. All that's happening right now. That's going to allow that system to behave a lot more like a mass transit system than a commuter railroad. It is crowded right now. We're breaking records on Caltrain, 50,000 riders per day. It's increased by 9% from last year. So the caller's correct that it's a tough commute right now, but we're putting a lot of money to make it better.
I want to read a couple of Facebook comments, and we'll go to more of your calls. Michael writes, I'm a solo driver due to childcare logistics where every minute counts, getting from work to pick up by 6 o'clock. Schools or daycare centers never seem to be located adjacent to transit hubs. Long-term planning should take this into account. Another listener writes on Facebook, not being able to get a seat on BART is more than a mere comfort issue for many of us who are partially disabled but who do not necessarily appear to be physically disabled. And Peter on our Facebook page writes, I'm all for public transit, but why spend so much on high-speed train projects connecting to the most congested areas? Instead, the money should be spent on local public transport infrastructure. I don't know if you're listening, Governor Brown, but we'll go to more calls, and we'll go to Amy in Oakland. Amy, you're on.
I had a question about the 80 corridor. I heard the speaker speak about the 101, but it seems to me that 80 seems to be more complex. There's a strong carpool culture. There's BART access, yet carpool lanes are backed up during rush hour as well. So I don't know if they had any suggestions for that.
Yeah, Randy Rensler.
Well, look, 80 is a big challenge, as the caller points out. I mean, we have in the Bay Area, most carpools are what we call 2+. You need two people in your car. The 80 corridor is 3+. And even at 3+, the carpool lane is breaking down, meaning that for those who use it, they're not getting the travel time savings that they would ordinarily expect. It is a big problem there. I think the best way to solve these problems around the Bay Area is to introduce what we call as an express lane network to allow it to be priced. So single occupancy drivers or people who can't form a carpool can still get in it. But it would allow us to change the occupancy levels. It would allow us to price it. That's the best option in that corridor. We're not going to widen that road. There are some technological things we can do. We can meter it better. We can give people more information so they can make a different choice. But that corridor is going to be tough.
And here's Pat who writes, Marin has an especially bad situation because all we have is 101 and essentially no mass transit options. I was amazed after moving here from the South Bay to find that there's a huge stretch of the carpool lane from Novato southward that is so full that it actually moves slower than the other three lanes. I can't wait until the smart train makes it through. And let's hear from more of our listeners by phone. Venkat, good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So a couple of questions which I have is, like, we are in carpool right now. So we actually take the 680 corridor, and I agree with the same problem as the previous caller, where even the carpool is blocked. And the other thing is, in the reverse direction, there is no carpool at all. And the other one is, some of these park and rides are full, so we end up parking at a nearby JCPenney.
Yeah, Randy Rensler.
Well, I think the first question is, I'm sure you're on a what we call a 2-plus carpool lane. The issue for the public side of this is that if we make it a 3-plus carpool lane, the carpool lane's performance will go way down because it's a lot harder for people to form a larger carpool. Again, the real solution here over a long period of time is to make an express lane out of that carpool lane to get the most out of it, to get the most mobility to benefit the most people. That is the long-term plan across much of the Bay Area, and that's likely what would solve the problem that you're in right now.
And we thank you for the call. And Alec Byan, let me get a response from you from a listener named Steve who writes, "We're living in a time of tight budgetary constraints and Proposition 13. Therefore, any project that is really going to be built has to be a low-expenditure, smart project. I can think of a few, such as running buses up and down 280 and 101. Let's not shoot for the moon. Let's find something that can actually happen."
Yeah, and I think improving operations on the freeways can be relatively low budget compared to infrastructure investment. And that's why, as we discussed earlier in the show, smarter metering schemes will decongest freeway locally. It won't provide the ultimate solution. It will do a better job. Better coordination with city traffic will also decongest the freeway. And I think that's exactly the direction the state has been going. And it's a really wonderful thing because with a really low investment, you can get an outcome which is quite significant.
We bring another one of our callers on, and that's you, David. Hi.
Hi. Your guests, unfortunately, have misdiagnosed the problem, and they're in the process of making things worse. The problem isn't congestion. The problem is the expectation of being able to drive alone to one's destination. If the expectation was that one had to share using a rideshare application on their smartphone, and that would get them access to an HOV lane that was converted from existing lanes, we would see a very, very different dynamic happening here. What's going on is that the council and MTC are instead wanting to throw the region's money into supporting single occupant drivers, which is exactly what the problem is.
And you say what, Jim Wunderman?
Well, I think maybe the listener wasn't listening because this is what we mentioned. We need to get more people away from being single occupancy drivers, and one of the ways to do that is to bring forward that technology that we're working on to help people find convenient ride shares. And so I think that's what the future looks like, and then making then incentivizing those multiple occupancy vehicles to be able to use the road for either for free or maybe even paying drivers for loading up their cars with folks. So there are some opportunities here to use technology we didn't have until recently because we didn't have the technology to do it. There are certain circumstances, as a previous caller said, where you have to take the kid to child care and it's really hard to get in a vehicle with someone else. But if we can at least reduce the number of single occupancy vehicles and do so significantly, it can have a big effect. And I think it's all, as was said, it's all the tools in the toolkit. It's not just one thing. We need to do a number of things together in a thoughtful corridor-based approach. One of the things we haven't talked much about is ferries. We have the roads and the transit systems that we have are jammed, but the water is an open waterway, and the Bay Area Council has long been an advocate for having a robust ferry system, and the person who called in about Alameda, that development can only work if we have a ferry system that connects Alameda to other places, and that's something that should happen in the Bay Area, and it doesn't cost that much, relatively speaking, to build a ferry terminal. There's a whole bunch of money that was appropriated in a bond issue back in 2008, state bond issue for ferries that stays in a bank account unexpended to actually build the boats. And so we should be looking much, much harder at a regional ferry system and bring more people closer to the waterfront, closer to their jobs, closer to where there's the natural air conditioning of the bay. I think that's an underutilized opportunity for the region.
And Alex Byan, you want to come here?
I think the numbers are growing slowly, but even if you look at the number of people doing car sharing, like 26,000 in 2003 to more than a million nowadays, I think numbers are increasing slowly. What I think has to be considered in looking at these problems is also cultural. So if you take the example of Europe, for example, the notion of ride sharing literally exploded after the volcano explosion in 2010 in Iceland because the air system collapsed, the train system collapsed. So the only thing which was at people's disposal was vehicles on the ground. And this is what it took for part of Europe to start to embrace that paradigm. And so here, I think it will happen. It's just the growth is a bit slower than
or maybe we need a disaster for it.
Well, we're not calling for it.
Randy Rensler, Bob writes, now I saw this morning they got rid of one lane of traffic on San Jose Avenue coming into San Francisco for a bike lane. I've seen this on Bayshore and other streets. This morning I saw one bicycle in the bike lane on San Jose. That's causing a lot more traffic, gas consumption, pollution, asthma, you name it.
Well, I think a lot of callers have talked about the fact that we are where we are in 2014, but the system was really built in the 1960s and 70s when kind of a different ambition was out there, which is to live far away and to drive your car. And one of the unfortunate things that took place was bikes and peds were kind of left out of the right-of-way. It was for cars only. And we need to do a retrofit here, and we need to make sure that the roadways are accessible to everybody, bikes and peds. It's a big challenge. I think in some cases, as this caller points out, right now, immediately, it doesn't look like it's a change that's solving the problem. It's causing the problem. But I think over time, we need to introduce these other modes and make them welcome on the roadways, and that's the most important thing we can do.
And we go to more of your calls. David, thank you for waiting. You're on the air, David. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. I don't know what it is about Davis this morning, but thank you for my call. Your guests are incredibly bright, intelligent. They get it. However, the missing piece here, the reason we commute is to work. Why is it that the companies that are based in the Valley haven't built in the East Bay? Why don't they locate facilities in Oakland, on the 680 corridor, out in Tracy, Stockton? They have built down the valley. That's why we commute there.
And, you know, I was looking at the Bay Area Council's The Pulse of the Bay and Jim Wunderman. I was a little bit surprised to see that at least two or three times a week, for any purpose, 77 drivers drive alone versus 15 who use a train and 12 who use a public bus, 27 who walk. Five who use a bike, and only two who use these employee shuttle buses. And by the way, 12 who use carpools. I think I've got all the numbers there. But so low on those shuttle buses, which were getting, you know, a great deal of attention.
Well, the 2% who use the shuttle buses is up from 0% a few years ago because there weren't. So I think that's a great inspiration that the companies are taking it upon themselves at their cost to provide a bus system so that their employees, who many live in San Francisco but work down where their companies are located in Silicon Valley, take mass transit. It is now collectively, I think, the fourth or fifth largest mass transit system in the region, 35,000-40,000 rides a day on those shuttle buses paid for by the private sector. And we'd like to see an expansion of that. And we work very closely with those companies to come up with a pilot project in San Francisco to get over some of San Francisco's concerns about buses on the streets. Kind of hard to imagine that people are concerned about buses on the streets, but it can be a little daunting when you're in some of the neighborhoods and see so many buses coming through. I think the caller's question about should companies locate their facilities in other parts of the region to improve the jobs housing balance is a good question. I think companies are always looking at real estate as part of their strategy. You know, so far,
Jim, you remember when we used
like
to talk about smart growth?
So remember
all the talk we used to have about smart growth back in the day?
Well, it's part of the smart growth curve, and you know, hopefully we will see more companies locate in places where, you know, places like, for example, the Concord Naval Weapons Station, which is a closed military base, which has access to BART, which has good highway connections, and seems like the kind of place where if all interests could be aligned, would be a great place for a new new center for technology and development that could balance jobs and housing. And there's a number of other bases around the region, large generation of real estate, which isn't necessarily available in other places because all our military bases were closed in the BRAC process, that could afford the Bay Area strategically to balance jobs and housing a lot better in the future. We didn't necessarily plan thoughtfully how we got to where we got. And when we built the BART system, we should have required local governments where there was a station to build housing and business right around those BART stations. Now we're trying to play catch-up, doing a reasonable job in some places, facing resistance in others.
Well, since you mentioned BART, let me get Karen on here. Karen, thanks for waiting. You're on. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
One of the One of the things that I think is really important and would solve a lot of the problems is one, or two of the things actually, one, build parking garages at BART, because when I try to find parking, it's impossible. They're very crowded. And number two, have the BART trains go more frequently. Having to wait 15 or 20 minutes after rush hour for a BART train is ridiculous. That's it.
Okay. Thank you for those suggestions. We'll be mindful of them. I'm going to read some more of your emails here. Thomas writes, as a transportation planning professional who has spoken with people who work at both Muni and BART, I was shocked to find out that neither is very interested in growing their readership due to capacity constraints. When are we investing in a new BART tube and new improved Muni light rail in a way that boosts capacity? The reality for anyone who has lived in other major metro areas is that we don't have a real metro system in the Bay Area, and we can't incentivize people to board overpacked BART trains. Alan?
And we're back to this last mile problem, is the fact that there are cultural barriers for people to embrace these new paradigms. And as we just heard from Karen also, the difficulty at the local station. So at the same time, an incentivization problem and an infrastructure problem.
And what about this listener, Randy Rensler, who writes, please talk about the way in which strikes and withdrawal of labor by workers and transit agencies have an impact on the economic health of the area and seek answers to what we can do about that. Or maybe I ought to go to you on this, Jim Wunderman, actually.
Well, we'll come back to Randy.
Yeah,
During the BART strike, we did a study, and it showed a massive economic impact for every day of the strike. So I think that we need to find a way around transit strikes and sick outs. The transportation service is a necessary part of life, and we shouldn't be inconvenience people and the economy in such a profound way. There has to be a better way to negotiate through these kinds of issues, and you know, we would certainly urge transit unions to really hold back from playing those kind of cards.
Yeah, but the workers would say they need to make enough to live in the Bay Area. I mean, that's the paradox.
Well, I think if you look at the salaries and benefit packages of our transit workers in the region compared to a lot of other folks in the region, if you compare those to the median wage and the income, they're often more than double what the median wage is around. And so I think there needs to be some very thoughtful consideration of how we provide fair and reasonable compensation to all public workers at the same time.
Yeah,
we need to be fair to the public, too.
It's a show for another day. You want to add something quickly, Randy Rensler?
Well, I just wanted to get into a couple of points from your previous caller. I think the first thing is that we do need to continue to invest in our system. To a certain extent, it's like the Golden Gate Bridge. You start painting it, and then you start again painting it when you're done. We have to continue to invest in the system. We need to build out our carpool lanes into an express lane network. That's going to cost some money. But look, the real thing that's out there, that's the big challenge, is we need money to repair our local streets and roads, to buy new BART cars, to make the system we have a world-class system for everybody. I think that's the big challenge we're always going to face.
Thank you, Randy Rensler from MTC. Thank you, Jim Wunderman from the Bay Area Council. And thanks also to Alex Bayan. And thanks to you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We have another hour of Forum coming up. We're going to meet Roz Chast in the hour ahead. So stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.